Thank you, Thabit William. I'm aware of what is happening in the country, and I totally condemned that kind of behavior by our youth. I know in every situation there is negative, there is positive of every situation. But at this moment, I would like, first of all, to condemn that kind of behavior that our youth are now perpetrating around the country. It's not good.
And why are you condemning it?
First of all, we are a diverse society in the country, and we just got independence a few years ago. We need to build our country using all the principles of building a nation, and there is no way we can accept to build our country using tribalism, ethnicity, divisions among ourselves. It is not healthy. So as a new nation, we need to start on a better ground with rules and regulations and with love and unity among ourselves. So that kind of behavior needs to look at seriously and then study why is it happening and how can we address it. Thank you.
Yes, but when you look at this youth sometimes, well, their complaint is that they sometimes have qualified people to work in these particular NGOs, but for whatsoever reason, maybe human resources from one other person, and then start employing people from his tribe and from another region, and they feel neglected, they feel they're not part of it, and they feel like, you know, in their state, they should be the one working. Don't you think that's a genuine point and a concern?
First of all, I'm condemning the behavior, the attitude, the way things are happening, the way they behave. I condemn that. It's not healthy. Mm-hmm. Let us not continue to cause violence in the country. The second aspect to that is the youth might have a right, but they don't know how to address it. First of all, we are aware that there is a discrimination in employment process. In certain NGOs, I'm not supposed to talk about NGOs because that's not my ministry.
Absolutely.
But because we are together, I'm a South Sudanese, that's why I'm talking about that. That is the responsibility.
You're a minister.
The minister
they regulate this.
Of labor.
Yes.
Nevertheless, what is happening is that in some of the NGOs, if the HR comes from a certain tribe, then most of the employees in those NGOs comes from that tribe. And that is very, very bad behavior. I don't like to mention tribes in South Sudan, but they know themselves. And the NGOs must take care of that. Because in a certain state, there are jobs that do not need, people from other states to have. For example, a messenger or a cook, name them. Mm-hmm. I think you need the indigenous people to train them. Train them. They must be trained. You cannot imagine that I just know how to clean. No, I must be trained how to clean. Therefore, the main problem here is that the HR employs their own tribes people. That's the bottom line here. And that is not healthy. I don't want it, and I condemn it also. While I'm condemning the behavior of the youth, I'm also condemning the employment process. It is not good.
All right. And you have said that, and you're saying the NGOs should change that. But as a government, don't you think it is the government that should really come and begin to regulate and look into the activities of the NGOs and restrict them until, you know, this is how it is supposed to be done, and not just let them do whatsoever they want to do?
First of all, the government, especially the Minister of Labor, is working on that seriously now. He's putting rules and the regulations in place, looking at the employment process. He's doing that now. Mm. On the same note, then we may blame the NGOs, but that is not totally the fact. Mm. But the HR, because some of the NGOs are foreigners, they don't know the culture. the diversity of South Sudan. But the HR, who are indigenous citizens of this country, should know that South Sudan is a diverse country. And when they are employing, recruiting staffs, let them consider the ethnicity part of it. Because this is South Sudan. We cannot abandon the culture of South Sudan and bring other culture. So let them know that when there is employment, consider who applied, how do you screen them, and you balance the employment. You cannot tell me that only one tribe is qualified. It is not true. Mm-hmm. South Sudanese are qualified, but they just need opportunities.
All right, thank you, Honorable. We'll get back to you. And Mr. Edmund Yakani, who is the Executive Director for Community Empowerment for Progress Organization, is also here with us in the studio. Edmund, once again, good morning and welcome. Mr. Yakani, what is your biggest concern in this whole thing if this trend is not addressed?
Thank you. In first place, I add also my strong condemnation on the attitudes and the approach that the youth in the country are taking to claim their rights. Remember, you can claim your rights, but bear in mind that you have responsibility for claiming your rights. And one of the responsibility principles is that don't take the law into your hand. Don't attempt to be, don't be violent. Raise it with evidence in a very constructive way. Your rights will be responded to. That's one thing that I'd like to mark, to put in first place. Secondly, we have to also put some facts. What, like Honorable have said, is that we have some specific individuals who handle departments of HR across the country. They are practicing these issues that the youth are raising. They can call their fellow colleagues from CAM, from wherever they are. And there's a common practice that you come to realize sometimes adverts are put on adverts board, but you come to realize that the people who sit at the interview, none of them is recruited, but somebody else who is not part of the interview is recruited. So it's that question you start asking yourself, are people recruited in advance? Those are facts. So with those facts, youth need not to go violent. Youth need not to terrorize lives of others. Youth need to have a very constructive way to do that. The third thing is that I would like to put...
Yes, let's go through that though. How do you want them to address? Because they have, addressed their grievances, they've written letters, and then nothing is happening on, and then, you know, they take the law to their hands. What approach do you want the youth to take?
They should continue with dialogue. I've come across this group of youth in one of the states, I don't mention the states, and they called me like, we put letters, we couldn't pursue anything, now we need to close office of this NGO. So they asked me for my advice that, okay, we're here, you are always an activist, you're a human rights activist, what's your advice? I told them first, build up your evidence against those who you're accusing. Once you build up your evidence, then table a case to two institutions, table a case to RRC at state level, table a case to labor office at state level with your evidence, right-handed. If they fail to act, then these are the first people who start suing them to court because they fail to respond. And they succeeded, by the way. They succeeded, and in 2019, you remember there's a report which came out and became a big headache report about malpractices in NGOs, covering two issues. Issues of how grants are awarded to NGOs by those NGOs that have responsibility to award grants, because some of them are awarding grants because of favor, because of friends, and actually even some people in the NGOs that have grants start creating their own organization, start awarding grants to their organization. And one aspect of it was the issue of human resource recruitments. And there's a very clear indicator in that campaign that we have evidence that it's not all organizations. It is few that the HRs sometimes start entertaining their ethnic group. And even they reach to the level that during recruitment, they can claim different tribe, by the way. They can come with different nationality. Some of them will come like, oh, we're Ugandans. But in the middle, as you continue to come to realize the true color of this person, that he is somebody coming from the HR department. So for me, in terms of way forward, that in terms of before the way forward, what is the issue? The issue is that our country is facing institutional racism in all the sectors, in public sector, in private sector, in NGO sector. Institutional racism is there. And I think in the public sector have taken long, and now it's migrating because it's a competition over employment. Now, the opportunity of employment in the public sector is limited. Opportunity of employment in the private sector are there, but they're less paid. Mm-hmm. So the suitable and green opportunity of employment is now the NGO sector. That's when all youth are campaigning for that. But also remember, some of these youth who are making this havoc, like what Honorable Governor Luis Lobong have said in Eastern Equatoria, is that even some of these youth does not have the qualification, because NGO sector is a sector of competition. Besides what we have seen, as I have mentioned, as a malpractices, still competition is there. But I come to realize that because we have huge institutional racism in all the sectors, it's now migrating to NGO sector. Because in the public sector, you cannot address it. You can't go to it because it will cause havoc in the public sector. In the private sector, you can't go for it because somebody say, no, I'm the owner of the business. It's up to myself who I want to employ. But now it's migrated to the NGO sector. So the question of institutional racism, for me, it become a big national issue. And that's why I like, since we're in the studio with Honorable Minister, one thing is that our country really needs to sit down and start discussing how do we avoid institutional racism in all the sectors. In the public sector, in the private sector, and the NGO sector. But the NGO sector is becoming more aggressive because it's fluid. It's good paid. If I can get $300 right now, I'm better than the Director General, the Minister of Government, who get 4,000 SSP. So I like rule to be there. If I'm a cleaner and I can get my $2,000 or 150 or $200 as a cleaner, I'm bigger than DG of government ministry. Mm-hmm. So it's become a fluid, it becomes competitive. Then that means for me, as a way forward, one, I will urge the Honorable Minister to start setting to the government and to the states a standard of transparency, assurance of transparency of recruitment. Because if you don't do assurance, I've worked with NGO sector in Khartoum. In Khartoum, assurance of transparency in recruitment is one of the tight procedure. Of course, the concept was, which NGO Act have mentioned, which youth have quoted, that 80% of employees have to come from South Sudan. But the idea is that in the NGO sector, you can't impose an employee. Mm-hmm. So if we're putting a system to assure transparency in terms of recruitment, that principle also not be a principle of imposing on NGOs individuals that sometimes are not qualified. So we don't impose individuals that. But I think it's a high time now. Our ministry, our honorable minister, need to make sure that at least the nation have a clear principle of conformity transparency with regard to human, to HR. And actually, that particular principle should be a principle to qualify somebody to take over a job, whether in NGO, in the private sector, or in the government sector. Because if you don't meet the standard, then that means a problem. Because sometimes one of the things that is disturbing me a bit, and I think this is where also sometimes the youth position hold water. Interviews are done. These interviews have taken all its procedures for transparency. But somebody who is a decision maker want to bring in a relative who is a burden for him in the supper or during the lunch in the plate. Mm-hmm. So for him to reduce that burden is to bring this person to get employed. So I tell him, no, my friend, the feeding allowance, you must get something on. And these are the common practices we have it. So some people are clearing their family responsibility burdens by recruiting their close.
Their own people.
Their own people.
All right, let the minister take over from here. Minister, yes, go ahead.
Thank you. I think Yakan is right. First of all, we have a problem in the country. I think let us tell the fact. Mm-hmm. The only thing that we don't like to accept the truth. As I'm talking now, some people are already warming up to condemn me at the end of the day. Let us call a spade a spade. Mm-hmm. The behavior of the youth at this moment is translated also in the way the government is running. Of course, you know, somebody made a statement some years back that if you find a messenger by the door, that means the minister belongs to that tribe. Mm-hmm. So we need also to begin giving examples. I mean, doing things by example. Mm-hmm. In the recruitment process within the government, we have the same scenarios whereby somebody somewhere will only employ his relatives and so on. And we are trying to deal with that amicably. Gradually, we shall get out of that. The second issue is that while we are blaming the NGOs, the employment process, let us also look at the other side of the coin. Mm-hmm. Yes, the youth have the right to claim their rights. But at the same time, let them also look into themselves. There is a problem of laziness in South Sudan. A lot of youths are lazy. And as a result, it happened in my own house when I recruited somebody to come and make some cleaning. Mm-hmm. The way that person did the work was so bad. So I have to resort to somebody else. Mm-hmm. Who is not a South Sudanese to come to clean. And this person did very well. So, in another way, let us also address our own problems. So, that is one side. The way forward, is that, first of all, let us stop laziness among ourselves as youths of South Sudan. Any job that pays is a job. You don't need to only to have a white collar job or what can. Any job that earns money is a job. So we need to stop laziness among ourselves. The second issue is to let the NGOs, especially the bosses of those NGOs and those private sectors.
Mm-hmm.
And South Sudan is a diverse country. They must always reconsider the issue of diversity in employment. That should be a law in the country.
Mm-hmm.
When you are employing 10, make sure you don't employ 10 from one ethnic group. So that we have to make a policy. And this has to be done with the Minister of Labor. And he's working on that. I'm convinced that in the short time, things will change in the employment process. So we must review the rules and the regulations of how we employ. The third aspect is that if there is any employment, the boss or those responsible within the private sector and within the NGOs must warn the HR. The HR are the problems. The human resource who are making the employment are the problems. They must make sure that the priority goes to that state or that county or that payam and so on. Priority for employment. There are qualified students and qualified
workers,
guys who are workers who are there. Give them the priority. Then if they don't qualify, then look outside. I think that this could be the best.
Great. Option. Now, we have a problem here, of course, and the problem is now youth are getting aggressive. They're becoming aggressive. Just recently in Eastern Equatoria, there was, you know, attacks on a few South Sudanese who are not from that particular area. And as a government right now, this is the problem. The youth, not only in Eastern Equatoria, I must say, but of course we had that in Maban, we had that in Bibor, we had that in Malakal and all these places. So yes, there is a problem here right now. As government, what is the solution? What are you doing to resolve this and ensure that this tribalism or this, you know, discrimination against fellow South Sudanese from other regions does not continue?
It is a complex question which cannot just be answered immediately. It needs a policy development. That means the government have to sit down to plan, discuss, and then come up with a solution. But of course, while the government may take time to come up with a policy, for now, I will just appeal to the youth to use rules and the regulation. Let them not take law into their hand. Let them come with the evidence, like what Yakani said.
Okay.
In one of the states, the youth came up with the evidence. And when they tabled to the government, then their problem was addressed. So let them also do the same in those states, rather than taking law into their hand and then becoming violent. You know, violence will cause criminal acts, and then we can lose life. We don't like to lose life again. But as the youth are the energetic body of this country, let them also use that energy to compile reports with the evidence that this is what's happening. While we leave that into the hand of the government, and as we are talking, I will take it to the leadership to say, well, how do we address this kind of situation?
All right. Great. Now, Edmond, coming to you, back to you, and what do you think should be done? I mean, how can we go about this?
I think I'd like to give a practical proposals. And this particular proposal is out. No, I sit at SEPA as a boss, and I have to manage SEPA because I'm almost facing the same thing in my leadership. One thing that we need to see have to come out as a secular of the government, both whether from Honorable Minister of Public Service and Labor, there's always, if you want to assure transparency in recruitment, then there's a two list, very important. Any NGO or any private sector that want to employ a staff, once they put adverts, they must publish this two list very clear. That's what you call the long list. The long list is a list containing the name of everybody who apply, should be published. Then from the long list, they come out what we call the shortlisted. Because normally, shortlisted are shortlisted from the long list. So they should publish the long list, they should publish the short list. This gives youth advantage to see whether anybody from the long list that is not in the short list talk about the job. That's the way how we start controlling this recruitment process. So long list must be published and short list must be published. And once the long list is published and the short list is published, they should be endorsed by the closest state entity, whether being it RRC or being it labor office in each state. But this should be in proper coordination with NGO forum. To make sure the NGO forum might have to be come in with the international NGOs and also enter into a dialogue with UN OCHA. So also because we can't call for transparency if we ourselves don't want to be transparent. That's what the challenge. So The challenge to us as NGOs that as we're calling for transparency from the state also need to be transparent. And the best way we can be transparent in our employment procedures is that long lists have to be published, endorsed by a government entity. Short lists have to be published, endorsed by a government entity. Then we go for interviews. Then after interviews, the results of the interviews that qualify somebody have to be also endorsed by the same authority that have endorsed the long list, the short list. So that if somebody want to pick up an argument against an NGO, then those procedures become an evidence to tell the person that, look here, we have undergone the transparent way. Because one of the things that is affecting us is that the absence of publication of long list and short list, people can be sneak into an office. And there's a good principle in South Sudan. It's a good practice that I'd like to bring. One, there's employment in South Sudan on friendship basis. Say, but you know me, I know you. You live in Miraya. You start working with BBC. You are told, oh, BBC is looking for a South Sudanese activist that is very aggressive, who can push for things. Say, oh, I know somebody called Edmond. Then shall call him, Edmond, bring your CV. I send my CV to you. You put your leadership. You convince the leadership. I'm confident in this person. Your leadership called me. Based on phone calls, every procedures I've done, and I sign a contract. That is a common practice here. These are common practices, whether among us South Sudanese or among others. That's one thing that I'd like to say as a way of transparency. But I think also it's a high time for the government to enter to a joint partnership with NGO Forum, with UN OCHA, to start doing organizational HR audits. Because absence of HR audits in this country have given some people really to run out with dividends that could have benefited others. Mm-hmm. Because we don't have HR audits. Like, I've never seen one day either RRC, Labor Office, and then Minister of Labor coming, SEPO, bring, we need to audit your staff. How do you recruit your staff? On what qualification? Where are they? Who are they? Because why I say HR audits? I've worked with one NGO on a consultant basis. This NGO did an HR audit. So this NGO created a map, South Sudan map. They put on South Sudan map with the counters. Then the boss warned the staff. The day I identify that you have pointed wrong place where you come from, I will dismiss you without benefits. Mm-hmm. And that's a well good paid NGO. And this boss was telling me our problems are Sudan. He's a foreigner. So he asked all the staffs, get the pain and point where you come from. My friend, almost 70% of the staff came from one particular county. And as Honorable Minister say, when we start relating, come to realize the HR, start recruiting them. Some of them are recruited through during dinner. Hmm. Imagine you call your brother, so
beer or
exactly whatever. Beer, a bottle of beer can recruit you for a job, a soda can recruit you a job, a prayer on Sunday can recruit a job, a funeral even. You are going for funeral late, from the funeral you arrange an appointment, say just send your CV. So those processes need to be controlled by the state, and the state to control that in a manner that shouldn't be an excuse to impose staff on NGOs. No, let NGOs have the privilege to get qualified staff. Right. So it's not politicized. That's one thing I look to protect.
Yes.
My other thing is...
Before you continue, yes, we'll get back to you, Edmond. Yes, Honorable, you wanted to say something. I can... Yes.
Yeah. One of the issues that we need also to look at is we need the government, maybe Minister of Labor, to convene a meeting with the International Partners Forum to come up with a way forward. First of all, what kind of job that requires a foreigner in South Sudan?
Mm-hmm.
We are only tackling about talking and tackling the issue of the youth. But it starts somewhere. And as a result of somewhere, we are being affected now by the youth.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, even within South Sudan, what type of job requires a foreigner? South Sudanese are qualified, but we voluntarily refuse them to have jobs.
Exactly.
that requires foreigners. Two, priorities in employment must be to the South Sudanese people. Then if there is no qualified South Sudanese to occupy that job, then we are revising it to the foreigners. So the government and the international partners must convene a meeting, and we must be serious. Otherwise, South Sudan is becoming like a laughing stock. What has never happened across the world can happen in South Sudan. Why? Just because we are so loose, we are so
sympathetic
with anybody.
Great. I'm glad you mentioned that, Honorable, because you are the government here, and we have laws in the country. We have the labor laws, and clearly the labor laws have specified that in any organization, probably 80% should be locals, and maybe 20% that can be foreigners. But also in that particular 20%, you know, like, can a national do that job or can do that job? So what does the law say, and is it being implemented as a government authority?
We have the best laws in South Sudan. To be frank, we have the best laws, the best rules, regulations, and the way forward. We have the best in South Sudan. The only problem we are facing is that we voluntarily refuse to use those laws. I think that's the short answer I can give you. And
why is it because of this
incident happening, we have to revise our way of doing things. We must use the laws that we have, apply them accordingly, and then we shall stop all these kind of behaviors. But of course, we are very relaxed to use our laws. I think that is the main problem. Otherwise, it is our making, and we may blame others, but it is our making as Sudanese people.
In other countries, and I can say an example is Kenya here, they introduced a rule where there's no foreigner that can do a job if a national can do that job. Unless if the national cannot do that job, that's when they can give it to an international staff, because now a national cannot do that. In South Sudan, you can find, and I can say this, in international organizations, a foreigner can be a cleaner. I mean, I don't think a South Sudanese cannot do that job. So as a government authority and as the Minister of Public Service here, clearly, is there nothing you people can do?
There is something we can do. We need a very strong political will to do that. It is a fact. In other countries, you cannot even... We have stayed in Uganda for many years, in Kenya for many years. You cannot get that job a foreigner is doing in South Sudan. It is a fact. But there is something wrong somewhere that we need to address among ourselves. Instead of only blaming others, I think it is better to look into ourselves and find out what is the problem. Is it our weakness? Is it our shortcomings? What is it? So it is an eye-opener for us, and we have to...
You are the minister here, and you have authority, of course, and you have the power to try to resolve this issue. Why don't you do that?
We have the power to do that, but we have also stumbling blocks somewhere.
Where is the somewhere? Where is it coming from?
The issue is that you may have good ideas to do, but you have also other external factors that prevents you not to act accordingly. So that needs food for thought among ourselves, and then to revisit our own behavior, our own laws, and to see why are we not implementing the laws that we made by ourselves. I think that's our shortcomings.
All right. Yes, Edmund.
To give answer on that, Sebit William, one of the biggest thing is really the issue of a top leadership political will for change. One of the biggest problem is affecting our government is that top political leadership will for change is a problem. I'll give an example. We have been complaining about the national NGOs registration. We realize that some foreigners comes into the country, look for a national who are a bit not strong, use that national to register an NGO. After the register, will kick this national out, they'll own the NGO, and they'll start running it as a complete national NGO with foreigners who sit, make decision. Whose problem is it? It's our problem that we have allowed our own nationals to be used. Now, when you discover those evidence and you bring to attention of leadership, that look here, this particular NGO is registered as a national, using national IDs, using national documents, but right now is run by foreigners. I've kicked out the national. I have quite a number of those things. You come to realize the person you complain to, who is supposed to take leadership to act, is faced with two main factors that I would like to qualify. Either this particular foreigner will go and call somebody higher than this person. And this particular higher person will not understand and will say, no, under the powers, under my directives. And then, you know, when you go political, become more bad when you have a political protocol that. And I'll give an example. Most of them like to use a high-level offices. I just want to give an example. Mm-hmm. A top office in the country. Somebody can go to a relative of a person who is having holding the high top office in the country, and that relative will go and tell that particular person. That particular person will call another person that I'm directing you. Make sure this thing stop, and you can't move there. That's one interference, political interference in these issues. This one. Secondly, because also our public officials, in terms of payment and remuneration, they have limitation. Some of these NGOs are going and bribing them. I've come across a situation where we are fighting an accountant in an NGO who pays staff less but report more. But he's migrating this money to his country and he's constructing. And when the accountant evidence was produced with a concerned person from a security institution, do you know what this accountant did? He just went to this person who we reported to and he just put the dollars. He told him, my brother, I'm coming to you. I heard there's a complaint about this. After I spoke, he tabled $25,000. To somebody's salary who is less than $50. And the person, when you came to the front and said, you people, you are politically motivated, you know, actually his attitude completely changed. The whole narrative changed. So those are the practices that we have. So for me, the best way forward that we need to address this issue, for me, is I first support what Honorable Minister have said. There's a need to convene a meeting between the government, UN OCHA on behalf of UN agencies, NGO forum in behalf of the international NGOs to discuss over this issue. What's the way forward right now as the youth are going? But also here we are calling on the youth. Don't be violent. Don't take law into your hand. Don't attack. Don't beat. Don't kill. Don't ambush. Allow the law to take its course. Right. This meeting is very important. But one thing also I'd like to bring forward, say, to William, in the beginning I want to bring, is towards our young population. I'm working with national NGO. I have offices across the country. There's this attitude among South Sudanese, the concept of we fought for it. So I want to be lazy because we fought for it. Okay, you fought for it. You have the independence, you fought for it. But in the job does not mean you fought for it. The job is need you to perform. So the South Sudanese have tendency, you can bring them. You forget about international NGOs. Let me share with you our experience. And our procedures of recruitment may not be as tense as international NGOs or UN agencies. Our own fellow South Sudanese, the moment we recruit, they say, we fought for it. So allow me to behave the way I want to behave. Let me be lazy, but my salary must continue because we fought for it. This culture of we fought for it will not take us anywhere. An NGO world, private sector world, does not have the concept of fought for it. It's either you have the knowledge or you have the skills, you have the papers, and you apply them, and they give you the privileges you want. So this culture of we fought for it, you need to take it away.
Right.
But I think one thing also I like to stress, and I'd like really to put before Honorable Minister, if you can reach to his counterpart in the Labour, we need to do an annual audit, an annual public service and HR audit. It's very compulsory. Even sometimes you can send the forms to the offices, fill up this form, and that should be part of a personal renewal of things like license. These things should be attached, should become a common practice. Because when we talk of multi-practices, it's not only cash money. The way how we deal with human resource is very important. But also, that gives you an attention to see the economy through foreign aid.
Mm-hmm.
Where is the money going in terms of the salaries going to staff?
Great. You know? And let's give a chance to the Honorable Minister. And just before you take it from the Honorable Minister, what Edmund said as well, do you sometimes face where, you know, you're trying to make something, but there is someone powerful than you who's trying to say, you know what, it shouldn't be happening this way?
It is happening in many sectors. It has not happened to me anyway. This is a big challenge in the country. Just a few weeks ago, one of the vehicles knocked somebody. And immediately, the person who knocked the vehicle of somebody became violent.
Mm-hmm. He was the one who knocked,
yeah.
Yes.
He's a criminal, but he's not violent. And they just call, hey, now I knocked somebody's vehicle and so. A heavyweight came somewhere. Without knowing that, the vehicle he knocked was also of heavyweight.
Okay.
So when then he said, "You just wait there, I'm coming." Within 5 minutes, the heavyweight man came and said, "What happened?" The heavyweight man also in that vehicle, who remained in the vehicle without getting out, also got out. So what happened? The other heavyweight man became embarrassed and then gave a slap to the driver who knocked the vehicle. "Why did you knock that vehicle?" and so forth and so on, you know. Then I said, no. The other heavyweight whose vehicle was knocked told the heavyweight who came to defend the criminal, "Come, let us go to address this issue." So he was collected. You know, this is very common practice in the country. It can be stopped. So what I'm saying is that it is happening, it is true, but we need to address it and we need to talk about it gradually. As we are talking now, I think there are changes already taking place. The more we talk the truth and to stop violence using rule of law, I think our problem will be solved. So I'm taking note of that. Yes, Yakan is correct that we need to have an annual audit, because there are some companies, private sectors, they are operating here illegally.
Exactly.
Employing people illegally. And then using some people as a curtain to operate in the country. We have a lot of money in the country. We can collect a lot of taxes in the country. But the issues that are they collected in the right way? That's why we go for 2 to 3, 4 months without salary. Not because the money is not there. The problem is that the collection process is not transparent, because there are some heavyweights who brings goods without tax. So this cannot continue like that. As a new country, we need really to put into practice all the laws that we have made to guide us, to govern the country. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. You can share your thought with us this morning here on the Miraya Breakfast Show. Remember, my guest today in the studio, we have the Honorable Minister of Public Service, Honorable Bangazi Joseph Bakasoro, with us in the studio. And we also have the Executive Director for Community Empowerment for Progress Organization, and that is SEPO, Edmon Yakani. We are discussing about this new trend that is emerging in South Sudan, where young people are demanding that NGOs should employ people in their home areas. And Honorable Minister, coming back to you, of course, the reason this is emerging is because of youth unemployment. Basically, the youth are unemployed and the youth does not see the job of the government, as they don't pay enough as such. They also don't, for whatsoever reason, they don't want to venture into the private sector for themselves, you know, and just do work for themselves or be creative and all that. So youth unemployment is a big issue in the country. And you, as a minister of public service, how are you addressing that? I mean, as we don't have even a youth, youth fund or something that can empower the youth or put youth employment into a picture. But how are you as a government trying to handle the issue of unemployment and youth unemployment in the country?
Thank you, Sir William. You are right. There is a lot of youth unemployment in the country. I'm aware of that, and most of the government officials are aware of that. Now, we have one issue that I need to bring the attention of the public. You know, in government, we have also a scientific approach in the government. You don't just employ for the sake of employment. We have nominal roles that exist, and it is based on those nominal roles that we employ. But at the moment, since 2005 up to today, there are some of the pensioners who are supposed to go on pension. They are unable to go because, one, there's no pension fund. Two, there's no political will to do that. Three, because of relations here and there, things are not really straightforward. Now, if you want to employ, for example, fresh graduates to grade 9, and we have a lot of grade 9 in the country, the issue is that grade 9 is filled. So we cannot multiply grade 9 for the sake of employing the youth. It means grade 9 have to be promoted to grade 8, and it goes on up to grade 1, then it goes on up to pension. So one must exit to leave a space
for the others,
for the others to come in. Since 2005 up to now, there is no pension scheme working. The pensioners are there, existing. Somebody above 70 is still working. You touch everybody. You speak. It affects everybody. So then, the question comes: now you are pensioning me, give my money and I go. The money is not there. Why? Because employees' tax are collected, but had been misused somewhere, and there's no money in the chest, in the pension fund. So, at the end of the day, this person have to remain there for ages, waiting to go out
on pension.
On pension. As a result, it affects the youth, the young graduates who are coming, who needs employment. They can't get any nominal role empty to get employment. So this is the issue which is affecting youth employment in the country. At the moment, we are now working on that, on the pension scheme. We must operationalize it so that we give chance to the youth to get employment in the government. It is in the process and we are working on that.
Great. And for you explaining this to me and having this conversation, it seems like, of course, the ideas are very clear. You know what you want to do. You know what should be done and what is right. But somehow, this frustration and the government, clearly the government as a whole, is not functioning the way people wanted or expected them to function. Because clearly, if you as a government minister is also talking like me in the street who expected you to be the one doing it, I mean, the systems are not working. There is clearly a point that things are not, it shouldn't be running the way it should be running. Why is that as government? Why are you not putting your house in order? Why is the government not operating like what the citizens, for the citizens and what the citizens want?
Putting our house in order does not take an hour. It does not even take a day. It takes a process. You know, when you begin with the wrong foundation, and people are acquainted to wrong foundation, it is not easy just automatically to change. So you must educate, you must sensitize, you must, create awareness. And this is what we are doing now. What we are saying now is
this creating
awareness. So that people realize that there is time to be employed and there is time to exit. They must know that. So, in the process of doing that, it will take some time. It needs political will from all of us. So that when your time comes to exit, I don't like to get a confrontation by somebody else, because we are respecting the rules and the regulations, the law of the country. Therefore, putting our house in order, yes, is there, but it has to take some time. It has to go gradually. We are now about 10 years as a government. So within 10 years, we cannot do everything. It has to take some time. We took 22 years to fight to get a country. We have not reached even there in order to change everything. So let us give ourselves time while we are consistent. We are consistent with what we are doing, that it must change.
And that's the whole point, though, giving ourselves time, but let's do something towards changing that, you know, narrative, or changing the way we do our things.
Yes, like now, the pensioners, some of the pensioners are already getting their little pension fund. It is a gradual process. So they are happy. The only thing which is not happening is to tell them, to give them their envelope
advance,
and then exit them totally. But right. Gradually it is taking place.
Great. All right, Edmond, you want to come in here, please? Go ahead.
You know, Sebit, one of the biggest things when talk of youth employment, also I like to speak to certain attitudes. The attitude of big man, Bendit, Kormadit, Motolawaran, that attitude is something that
Bakumba.
We need to stop it. We need to stop this, because this attitude is interfering with the opportunities of employment. It is everywhere, in the public sector, everywhere. I will give an example, just life example. When the 32 states were created, I was reached by a group of people, my community, and so in SSBC, they say, let me become a first governor for Ye River State. And I went quiet. People, media asking me, are you going to take the job? I went quiet. Simple, I want to discover something. I come to discover the culture of the big man. You know, because of my silence, I started receiving calls. Somebody called me and said, Edmond, I'm chief so-and-so. I'm the senior chief among the chiefs in the village. All this time I've been praying to God to bring one of our sons to the governorship. You have got the chance now. I say, and then what? He said, you know, there's a son of this person who is in Canada, he's an accountant. Please call him, let him come to take the finance. Take care of this, your bodyguard. There's a son of so who is in the police. He's in Rumbe, call him to become a bodyguard. Imagine. The culture of big man is destroying employment opportunities and even destroying systems. We don't put that. That's just one thing I'd like to mention, the question of a big man, because big man is affecting, even if somebody want to create a system to work, one, we don't have this, if we don't fight this attitude of big man, we cannot really handle ourselves. That's one thing I want to bring. The second thing, for us to talk about youth employment, I've been for the last 6 months watching on something somebody alerted me to look at, is cash transfer from country outside and incoming of cash. Actually, cash transfer in South Sudan outside is triple than incoming cash. So what does that mean? That means we have capital that if they're supposed to be remaining in the country, they could have offered an opportunity through banking system to increase loans. So if cash transfer from country outside is tripling incoming cash, we're at loss. Simply why? Because we have this concept of open economy. The concept of open economy have made us not really control our economy. And specifically, the banking system is loose in the country. All the banks are foreign banks with some few Sudanese inside, but all central bank does not discuss beyond issue of hard currency versus national currency. So the flow of cash is getting. Forex bureaus are too many in the country that these forex bureaus start transferring money even without controlling this money. So forex bureaus are used as escaping goats, not to keep money in a bank. Because if this money could have kept in a bank, we could have used that bank and then you start using banking system to start providing loans for you to go to private sector. So they can go on their own to venture. Because if you want to venture for private sector, you need something to start with. Mm-hmm. So, but you don't have access for something to start with. Even some youth have the interest to really leave public job, leave everything, and go to private sector. But the access to capital is not there. So we need to discuss about how do we control our currency in terms of the banking system to create an opportunity for youth to that. The other thing I want to put is that also, our youth, because of the long struggle of the war, have developed sense of reluctance. Like dependence become a normal thing. The moment, I'll tell you, for example, where I'm coming from. I have my own youth that see, oh, Edmond is a known activist. So what they do, they said at the end of the month, they give a call. You know, I'm sorry, I'm supposed to this, I need this. So I started asking them, like, do you feel, is it God who created me and blessed me to be like this? I struggle for it. So why don't you ask me for something that makes you to struggle to be like me? Rather than this every month waiting for free soda, free money, free lunch. So for me, these are some of the issues that we need to put forward. While coming to the government, honestly, the reality is that we have, I don't know if I can call it three level of governments. And this is really going to challenge. And I remember when our current Minister of General Education, Honorable Awut, when she was in the public service, when she attempt, you know what happened? What happened is that because you have some people who have self-promotion. People promote themselves on their own. Simply, especially in the security sector, you disappear as a captain, you come back as a brigadier. While qualification for you to be there is a problem. Some people in the ministry, you know, there's this tendency of where some people want to remain as a director general for the ministry forever. And they like to attack any new coming people into a ministry. You know, I'm qualified, I'm from Cambridge. Provide. If you're a holder of 1964 degree, you want to compare your degree with the degree of today, 1964, where the subject of 1964 now has been taught in secondary school. But you want to stick in the ministry, I'm the DG, I'm the qualified, during our British time, what British time? British have gone long time ago. So accept change. So we have elders who have stick as a curse for an employment opportunity. And there's so many of them there in the ministry. And that's why I'm saying, I was sometimes discussing with somebody, I say, sometimes how much we challenge our politicians for being corrupt. Actually, we have corrupt civil servants that observe politicians into corrupt system. That you come to realize that you come as a minister to a ministry, you have elders who are there for quite long, they play around the information. Imagine when you're becoming a minister, and this is what I'm wishing one day, I want to see how you become a minister. Somebody who welcome you with gold, with chicken, some of them take chairs to your house. What are they sending the message? They're trying to keep you hostage. So we need to also to have an intergenerational dialogue. And I think what Honorable Minister have mentioned, that they are working for it, is really exit have to happen. With that exit, there will be no job, honestly. Let us be sincere.
All right. Yeah. Let's go now. Of course, let's go through some of the comments and questions that are coming to you through our text messages. And we'll be picking questions. Just for our listeners, if you just join us, please, you're welcome or welcome back. My guest in the studio today, we have the Honorable Minister of Public Service, Honorable Bangasi Joseph Bakosoro, with us in the studio. And we have Edmund Yakani, who is the Executive Director, Community Empowerment for Progress Organization. And we are discussing about this particular situation of employment and youth now getting annoyed that people from other parts of the country or from other region are the one coming and dominating the NGO jobs in their counties or in their states or in their towns. And this is the discussion that we are having right here on the Miraya Breakfast Show. And this is coming from Ugwak Simon in Torit. And Ugwak Simon is saying, we have national NGOs that had one South Sudanese in the board of directors there in Juba, and another interviewed a driver but employed a different driver in Torit here. How do you feel about this? Where you, and Edmund, earlier you mentioned this, where, you know, they use the locals to make and all that, you know, basically on Ogwak's concern. What's your thought on that?
And I think for me, that's true. There's so many cases like that what I've mentioned. And that's why if we have a proper national public service and HR audits that informs RRC a renewal certificate, these are some of the NGOs that will be shut down. Mm-hmm. Because yes, we are one of the things we need to put our mind, yes, we are members of East African community. Any East African citizen may have the same privilege like us here. But the question is, if we don't have system for that integration can be abused. So the only way is we need to really commit ourselves to have a system in a country that control license and make sure that this licensing adhere to our national interest. Is our national interest for you to fight? Or our national interest for you to get jobs? If our national interest for you to get jobs, is are you to get jobs through violence, through until this level where they start attacking, killing, and beating? No. So for me, what he said is correct. And there's some quite number of samples like that, that were foreigners who come to this country, they work with international NGOs, they lobby, they use a South Sudanese, they register a national NGO. I know some of them who come and work with international NGOs and stuff, now they're heading their own national NGOs. And also we have national NGOs that are created by nationals, but they prefer to bring nationals, so people are from outside, because those people, they can control. They can control, they can tell them, if you misbehave, I'll deport you. Mm-hmm. So they don't want to recruit South Sudanese because South Sudanese argue with them over the practice. So that you have these NGOs where the director of South Sudanese, they get a grant, he's given 10%, he put in his pocket. The rest who implement the project is foreigners. So also we need to change ourselves as South Sudanese in the way how we conduct our business.
Great. Now, Honorable Minister, there is a question coming from Peter in Munuki, and Peter is saying that, okay, if the Labour Law says 80% should be for locals, now, does this 80% go to locals in a specific state or to all South Sudanese?
I think the Labour Law is very clear. It goes, the 80% goes to South Sudanese. Mm-hmm. And then, now, it is our analysis, our translations. We translate again into a smaller perspective. For example, 80% should go to the state. 80% should go to the county. 80% should go to the Payam. Mm-hmm. That's very clear. That means if there is any employment in a county, consider first
the people.
The priority is the people within the county. Then it goes to the state. If there's nobody in the state, it goes to the whole South Sudan. It is very clear. But then the practice is not correct.
And who is supposed to look into this? Who is supposed to ensure that this is at least implemented?
You know, okay, the Ministry of Public Labor is in charge of that. RRC is in charge of that. The humanitarian wing of the government, they are supposed to be in charge of that. The issue is that Edmond just explained it a few minutes ago. The person in charge of that responsibility may not have that power to act. Somebody somewhere will just give an order. You know, the country is a bit porous in the way we do things. So,
right.